In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
And welcome, everybody. This is, I believe it's episode 38 of the Energemetra 6 podcast. We're going for the Veil of Mysteries, chapter 15 today. Appreciate everybody being here. And real quick, let's do the V for V. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value-for-value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. All right, well, we are working on the Veil of Mysteries, Chapter 15 today. We have Mel and Luke and oldest, second, and third today, and appreciate everybody being here, appreciate our listeners being here, and I hope you enjoy it. This is the Veil of Mysteries, Chapter 15. When something matters that much, who cares what kind of enemy you're facing? You fight. Lara Formalius is cited by his advisor, Hector Lord. Nate awoke slowly and painfully. His head hurt, and he felt like he'd been run through a ringer. He could hardly think. At least there'd been no nightmares. A fleeting sense of gratitude for tiny favors gave way to urgency. The nascent memory of what had happened pushed him from a reclining position onto his feet, but he found himself unable to move, fighting against restraints. He thrashed, then opened his eyes and forced himself to calm. There was dust all around him, and his skin felt gritty. A wave of déjà vu hit him, pulling him back to his first waking moments in this universe, and he groaned as mixed reality and memory crashed down on him too hard to bear. A voice, Andrew's voice, brought him to focus.
Welcome back.
Nate blinked, reaching up to brush at dust-caked eyes. What? He cleared his throat. What's our status? Andrew laughed mirthlessly.
Well, they're definitely following us. You told me to head for the Abyss, so that's where we're going.
He shrugged.
I had to reduce acceleration to half our max when we passed their stragglers, just so we're not pulling too far ahead.
Nate nodded groggily and fumbled with his restraints. How's everyone else? Did everybody make it through okay? Andrew didn't answer, and Nate saw he was looking at the girl who had come with Travis, sitting several chairs over from Nate. Nate struggled to his feet and brushed more dust and metal flakes from his clothes. He glanced back at the wall behind his seat and stopped in shock. His extropy had left it a ruin, with great holes centered on the places where he'd put his hands, and giant spiderweb cracks running in all directions. The surface had disintegrated and was flaking away. Bits of dust and slivers of metal fell even as he watched. Stepping forward, he realized he was walking through a layer of metal dust. The piles of shavings on the floor against the wall were ankle high. Ignoring the mess, Nate walked over to where the girl lay in her own acceleration chair, her breathing shallow. She seemed to be in bad shape. Her freckled face was too pale, and her skin looked papery. Nate took a quick glance around the bridge. Several of the others lay reclining in their own couches, blinking at him and looking none too good themselves. Nate reached down to lay a hand on the girl's head and probe gently with Energemetra 6. She really was near death, and Nate thought back to the insanity of the battle they'd just barely survived, thanks to her. I don't even know her name. She had less to give than any of us, but she gave it all. Everything she had. He shook his head bitterly. She shouldn't have to pay for my mistakes. Beside her, Travis' eyes opened. He said,
Amy, she's a fighter. No half measures. If anybody can live through it, she can.
Nate nodded. I can help with that, at least. He laid one hand on the already damaged wall and another on Amy's forehead. Repeating what he'd done for Ralph on Solace was far from trivial, with his head hurting and his focus so abysmally poor. As he prepared himself, a ghost of memory reached out, grasping hands to pull him into the struggle he had felt when trying to accomplish simple tasks in that other world. No matter. However difficult it was, Nate owed it to her. As he reached into the fields and forced a complex weave of power into her body, Nate heard Travis gasp next to him. Amy's damage was actually less entrenched than Ralph's had been. Ralph had been drained again and again over the course of days and weeks, left near death every time, while Amy had used herself too hard only once. After less than a minute, Nate was done. The transformation was remarkable. Amy's face was flushed and healthy, her brown hair curling around her ears instead of hanging limp. He reached out to Travis next, raising his eyebrows in question. Travis hesitated, then nodded his permission. As Nate finished healing Travis, John caught his eye.
Can I help?
Nate eyed him up and down and barked a laugh. Huh, you look almost as bad as he did. He motioned to Travis. Here. Nate stepped over to John and repeated the same healing for him. It got a little easier every time he did it, as the pattern burned itself into his brain. And when he finished, he looked up to see John watching him closely. If you think you can manage it, Nate shrugged. John nodded and stood, stiff motions attesting to lingering pain. He watched closely as Nate put his hands on Rachel's shoulders and did the same for her as he'd done for John himself. After that, Nate spent the next 10 minutes walking around the bridge, healing everyone else. After watching Nate's increasingly deft work on several of the others, John attempted the same with Kevin. He was still trying when Nate had completed his work on the others, and as Nate came over to him, he shook his head helplessly. Nate laid a hand on his shoulder and smiled. It's okay. I've got him. By the time Nate finished, he felt ready to collapse again. His head was swimming, and it was all he could do to stay upright. Nate flopped into an empty seat that wasn't covered in metal dust and flakes, then looked around again at his friends. They were all silent for a time, each recovering from the trauma of their desperate battle. As he sat resting, Nate felt the grim reality of the situation settle like a mountain on his shoulders. His friends were relying on him. He was supposed to be leading them against a universe in which even the rest of humanity hated them, simply because of what they were. And they didn't even know what he really was. He had been so slow and useless at the end. If he wasn't on the edge of being sucked into that witless other self, would he have come so close to getting them killed? Only Amy's intervention had saved them, and Nate's insufficiency had almost cost her life. He wasn't sure if Rebus or the adjutant had done something to him, but he thought he could feel his own clumsiness seeping through from that other version of himself to dull his mind. The trouble he faced now, even just finding a way to deal with this monstrous fleet of changed, seemed impossible. The larger situation was simply too much for him to face. Eventually, Ty said,
So I think maybe, just maybe, they were trying to kill us.
Groans and chuckles circled the bridge, and Shannon grinned at him.
Nah, pretty sure it was just you.
Ty nodded, mock seriously.
I'm definitely the scariest.
The groans were universal this time, and Ty asked more soberly,
So, what now?
Nate stared at him, trying to think. His brain fog was slowly clearing, but slowly was the operative term. Still, there was something at the back of his mind. Something that had occurred to him in the thick of the fight that he hadn't been able to give attention to at the time. After the silence had dragged out for long enough that Ty looked ready to speak again, Nate turned to regard Andrew, Shannon, and Shauna. Frowning as he thought his idea through, Nate asked, "How many of them were following you three when you came through from the Milky Way?" Shauna shivered in memory.
"About a dozen. Only Resolute could get close, though."
Nate nodded acknowledgement, then asked Travis, "How about you? You said there are at least 50 of them out there?" He jerked his thumb toward the rear of the vessel. Travis frowned in turn, thinking. But Amy cut in before he could answer.
"Oh, it wasn't 50 at first. And by the time they came up on us, there were at least 100 of them."
Nate raised his eyebrows questioningly. "So they waited for you?" Amy was obviously thinking as she spoke.
"They spent a long time herding us around before they actually tried to box us in. The only reason I can think of for them to do that would be to make sure there were enough of them. But that's silly. Even one of those monsters could have shot us to rags."
Nate said ironically, "Those differences in numbers are quite a coincidence."
"So they knew?"
Travis spoke slowly, still catching up with Nate's thoughts.
"They knew we'd come here? How?"
Nate shook his head. "How they knew isn't as important as the fact that they did know." He looked to Keevan. "Keevan, the Keeper said the Abyss was dangerous. Why?" Keevan grimaced, clenching his hands around his UPT.
"That place has a lot of really bad attention on it. I don't know who's watching, but it's easy to feel, even if you don't go all the way to the center."
"It's the Watcher,"
Rachel said.
"John and I spent 1,000 years with that awful Void Spawn's attention on us. It's in the whole Abyss, though we were pretty close to the edge. It may be stronger further in."
"It feels like the Shard of the Black Gem."
Shauna's gaze still carried shame when she looked at Nate, but he just nodded. She was right. The feeling was very much the same. "So," Nate said thoughtfully, "people keep coming through from the Milky Way in the Abyss, and there's a presence here that can actually be felt. Another coincidence?" He finished with an ironic twist to his lips. Looking around the bridge, he saw that everyone had caught up, and there wasn't a single face that didn't have an expression as grim as his.
"So what can we do about it?"
Shannon's question was almost despairing. Nate looked at her thoughtfully. "Do you feel normal?" Shannon blinked.
"No, of course not. We just fought..."
She stopped abruptly and stared at him, obviously noticing something else. "You feel it too, then? Like somebody staring at you out of the dark?" Nate turned to look at everyone else on the bridge. "And the rest of you?" They all nodded except Andrew, with even Keevan looking around nervously. Nate turned back to Shannon. "We keep going. That's what we do. As to what's after that, you'll have to trust me for now." Shannon nodded slowly, her face troubled, then again sharply.
"I do trust you."
Several of the others hurried to agree. Meanwhile, Andrew had been staring straight ahead, obviously not paying attention to the rest of their conversation. He blurted out,
"I was a coward."
"What?" Nate stared at him, dumbfounded. "You were flying the ship. What more could you have done?"
I should have. Amy almost died."
Andrew shook his head.
"I could have done something."
Nate snorted, echoed by several of the others around the bridge. "Andrew, you're not allowed to call yourself a coward. You have less to prove than any of us." Nate paused, then asked, "Nothing I can say will change your mind, will it?" Andrew shrugged uncomfortably, and Nate sighed. "If it's any help, I promise you'll have plenty of opportunity to use E6 against them. For now, I'm just glad you were there to fly the ship." Rachel spoke up quietly.
None of us helped Nate soon enough. None of us even realized we could until you said so, Andrew. Even then, we were almost too late. If anything, you saved us. We should all have thought of it sooner.
Nate looked around at all of them. None met his gaze, and he sighed, then said, Look, we all need to give each other grace sometimes. Accepting grace for yourself matters just as much. He bit his lip as his own words struck him deeper than he expected. Nate sighed again and shook his head tiredly. Andrew nodded.
Thanks.
Nate nodded in return. For now, just stay far enough ahead that they haven't got a chance of hitting us, even if they try. Keep heading for the center of the abyss. Over the next few days, the sensation of being watched intensified more and more as they streaked into the emptiness of the abyss. It might have been Nate's imagination, but as they proceeded, he could have sworn there were fewer and fewer stars visible from the bridge. Then again, that might have just been an artifact of the mental and emotional strain. He couldn't have said where the feeling of oppression and darkness came from exactly, but after they entered the abyss proper, it became undeniable. It was like having the great eye of some evil being fixed on them through a telescope. Though they saw nothing different around them, the sensation of being watched plagued them all, and there was no reprieve, even when they slept. The feelings of apprehension and stress got to be so strong that John began regularly asking the rest of the group if they wanted him to help put them to sleep using Energemetra 6. Ty, Shauna, and even Shannon agreed to it. The others just soldiered on in silence, or in John and Rachel's cases, with something approaching the grim amusement of gallows humor. As Rachel said to Nate on the second day,
We lived with the Watcher for so long when we were imprisoned, it hardly registers now.
Her obvious discomfort made it clear that she was putting a bolder face on things than was justified, but they did cope better than any of the others. Shauna still tended the plants growing in the Adamant's primary corridor, and Shannon still grimly went about her normal work checking the ship's mechanical systems. But no one visited the rec room or spent any time going through the ship's library. Entertainment and exercise were beyond all of them. For Nate's part, when he was able to sleep at all, his dreams were even more disturbing than usual. Waking up was downright terrifying. The feeling of being watched by something utterly malevolent was excruciating when his mental defenses were down from sleep. The feeling that he, the weak link, had no business leading became almost inescapable after the third night of awakening from the same nightmare, staring helplessly at himself, beating his head against a wall in pain and despair. Insufficiency and self-loathing impressed themselves into his consciousness so firmly, Nate could hardly function any longer. Grim determination was all that kept him moving. It was 3 days after they crossed into the abyss proper that Nate found Shauna crying uncontrollably in the passage outside the bridge. She was sitting against the wall, her arms wrapped around herself, shoulders hunched against the presence that haunted them. When Nate bent over, she looked up into his face.
I can't. It's always there.
Nate hugged her gently, racking his brain for anything he could do to help, feeling the weight of the unspeakable attention pressing down on him more terribly than ever. Behind him, the hatch to the bridge opened, and he heard Shannon's voice.
Sis?
A moment later, Shannon was beside him, holding her sister in her arms. Shannon looked up at him, her face grim.
I should have known. She's always been so sensitive.
She shook her head.
I don't know how to help her. I'm having a hard enough time of it myself.
Nate nodded, then said slowly, I have a thought. He turned and entered the bridge, then moved to the acceleration chair he'd used during their wild escape. They'd done their best to clean up the mess he'd made of the bridge, sweeping the floors and washing the dust from the couches. Andrew had even gone so far as to try to clean the flaking surface of the wall, shooting Nate exasperated looks all the while. His efforts were to no avail. It took at most an hour or two for a fresh coat of dust to break loose and fall free to coat everything nearby. Under the circumstances, Nate decided there was no reason to cause damage to some other part of the ship, and who knew how much extropy this particular brainstorm would create. He sat down in the seat and set his hands against what remained of the wall behind him, then reached out once again and grasped Energemetra 6. He couldn't exactly see the malevolent presence that haunted them, but he could feel it even more acutely with his senses attuned to the fields. Again, using instinct to guide him, he reached out to Resolute's shields and set to work. Other than restoring Ralph or the others from their entropic shock, this was the most detailed task he had ever attempted. In a sense, what he did now was even more difficult, because in the former case, their bodies wanted to return to health, and that had helped to guide him. Here, he had only his wits to work with, but once he had a pattern started, he had a much easier time completing it. It was almost like some bizarre cosmic version of knitting, he thought, looking over the weaves. Almost an hour later, as he was finishing tying the weave together on the opposite side of the disruption field he'd created, he heard sharp intakes of breath all around the bridge. He completed his weave enough that all he had to do was hold it steady and opened his eyes, looking around. Everyone on the bridge was staring at him in disbelief, their relief almost palpable. Nate grinned at them wanly, only then realizing how much the work had taken out of him. After a minute or two, there was a cry from the hatchway, and Shauna was throwing her arms around him. Nate stopped in shock, then returned her hug gingerly. After a moment, Shauna stepped back, looking abashed. But she said,
"Thank you. I just couldn't take it."
She stopped to look at what Nate was doing with Energemetra 6, then whistled softly.
"How long can you keep that up?"
Nate shrugged. "Dunno. A while, at least. Long enough for you all to have a breather." He looked around, noting that only Keevan and Amy were absent, and said, "So, we still can't talk freely, but we should at least try to go over what's next. Andrew, how far are we from the center of the abyss?" Andrew shrugged from his place at his console.
"Roughly a day, but what exactly constitutes the center of this hole? I really couldn't tell you."
Nate nodded thoughtfully. "What I have in mind won't take precision. We will have to cut the engines, though. How long can we coast before they catch us?" Andrew looked thoughtful, then asked,
"Can I pull ahead of them? Right now you'd have maybe 2 or 3 minutes before they could range on us. I can open that up without too much trouble, though."
Nate nodded again. "Yeah, give us an hour's leeway. I don't want to take chances. And along those lines..." He looked over at Travis. "Can you go find Amy? I have a question for you two." It didn't take long for Travis to return to the bridge with Amy in tow, and Nate stared at them both for long enough that Travis actually started to fidget. Nate snorted. "You both joined us in defense of Adamant, even though it almost killed you." He gestured toward Amy. "I have a question for you before we wind up in really serious trouble again," Nate said, the increasing effort of holding his disruption field in place making his voice hoarse. "Travis Retton and Amy Miles, will you follow me?" Amy nodded without hesitation.
"I will."
Travis took longer to consider, but he nodded as well.
"You've had more success against those monsters in less than a week than I've ever seen from anyone else in my whole life. If you can really kill them..."
He shook his head as if he couldn't truly believe it.
"I'm in."
Nate raised an eyebrow. "Is that an if or a yes?" Travis grinned.
"Yeah, I'm with you."
Nate nodded back, then turned his head to look at John and Rachel. "Would you two see to the schemic?" During the few minutes he'd been talking, Nate's disruption field had begun to warp. He could feel it slipping away from him, and he turned his attention from Travis and Amy to focus on the failing weaves, straining to bring his work back into alignment. Part of it was so distorted that he decided his best bet was to actually rebuild it. Whatever force was watching them had managed to actively twist his work into a near teardrop shape, despite his use of Adamant's shield to anchor it into place. Nate vaguely sensed the use of Energemetra 6 near him as Travis and Amy both accepted the schemic. His mind was focused, though, as he fought to restore the field, feeling the gaze of whoever it was leaking through like water through a sieve anywhere the weave had warped. By the time he'd finished, Nate had little doubt that if he wanted his construct to continue working, he'd have to focus his whole attention on keeping it in place. Whatever was fighting him had figured out very quickly how to affect his hold on the fields, something he hadn't known was possible. Now his work didn't stay in place without constant adjustment. Nate turned his attention back to Travis and Amy, then fished in his pocket and pulled out the remaining amulets. He held them out, allowing Amy to pick first, taking the brown one, followed by Travis, who chose the turquoise. As Amy took her pendant from him and it began to glow, her eyes widened.
So that's how you're doing it.
Immediately, her eyes narrowed again and she looked outward. Nate could feel what almost seemed like gentle fingers probing his weaves, and he grunted. Andrew, Nate said, if I'm asleep when we're an hour from what you think is the center of this hole, wake me up. I get the feeling this is going to take all of my concentration. With that, he turned his attention back to what had become a real battle to keep the weave steady. The sensation of someone touching his weaves continued. It was Amy. He knew it was. Then she was pushing on his weaves where they were weak, trying to help hold them in place. Nate's instincts took over again, and he gave her access to his working. Next to him, Amy gasped. Nate vaguely heard Travis murmur,
"Impossible."
Then, Amy's furious efforts to help maintain his field redoubled. Giving her access had made changing his own construct harder than before, but only a little harder, and with two of them, they were able to keep up with the interference. Then he felt Rachel next to him, her hand on his arm, and he shared control with her as well. Over the next few hours, Nate was able to keep his field active with the help of his friends. They took turns coming in to help, ducking out when they started to get tired. Every single one of them took a turn. Controlling the construct took a huge amount of willpower and left Nate progressively more and more exhausted. Once created, though, it required almost no new use of Energemetra 6 to maintain. After what felt like days of constant effort, but could only have been a few hours, Nate was so tired he had to try to sleep. So he passed control of his construct to Rachel. Sleep took him within seconds. Nate awoke to Andrew shaking him gently. He felt groggy, but he still had no sensation of being watched. Which meant what? Nate looked around the bridge to find Shauna, John, and Kevin all in couches with their eyes closed, concentrating. Nate raised an eyebrow at Andrew. Still at it? Andrew grimaced.
We're all tired from keeping the field up, but it's better than before. I wish we had Laura here. A psi talent would be particularly good for this.
Nate nodded and opened his senses to Energemetra 6, noting the disruption field was still in place. He tracked across it, looking for signs of strain. They were there, but the field corrected as quickly as it warped. Shannon turned from her own console to give him a grim but self-satisfied smile.
It got really bad for a while, but I guess whoever it is decided he couldn't break it. Since then, it's been easier. It's more like he's just poking at us now.
Nate smiled back. Good work. This is better than I'd hoped. He turned to Andrew, who was still standing beside him. How close are we? Did I sleep long? Andrew shook his head sourly.
We're close enough. It's like I said, this thing doesn't have a center. It's just a bigger empty spot than the space around it. Now or an hour from now is about the same, really.
Nate nodded slowly, thinking. No time like the present, then. We'll have to shut down the Retton drive and coast, but I need to get to the airlock first. Andrew looked at him with narrowed eyes.
Can you tell us now? What are you planning?
Nate twisted his lips sourly. Better not. I'll comm you intraship when I'm ready. He paused, then shrugged. If you've guessed, that's fine. But I'm not giving that thing out there any clues if it can see through the field. With that, Nate rose from his seat and headed for his cabin. Once there, he unstrapped the globe of the veil from its place in his acceleration couch and started for the airlock. Nate had been making too many assumptions for his own peace of mind during their trip into the abyss. First, He'd assumed the presence watching them was somehow commanding the ships in pursuit. He had no way of knowing who or what was watching them. It could have been Lastus Rowland himself from the Milky Way, or one of the shades from within the twilight, or even some unknown third party. Second, he'd assumed whatever it was wouldn't know what the Globe of the Veil was. Or, if they could see it was an artifact, they at least wouldn't know what it was for. If Paul had used the Great Schemic for his construction of the globe, that was a fairly safe bet, but it wasn't a certainty, even now. Finally, he'd assumed he drew the right conclusions from his all-too-brief examination of the globe when he originally shut it off. He needed to be able to activate it again without trouble, unleashing a veil that was far larger than it had been before. Taken together, that was far too many gambles for his liking. Something was sure to go wrong. He could even feel something tickling the back of his consciousness. Something he'd missed. It didn't matter. It was the best idea he could come up with. Anything else that had occurred to him was an even bigger gamble. The only other idea he'd briefly considered trying was to outright destroy the enemy by himself. He might have the power for it, but controlling that much Energemetra 6 at once would almost certainly consume him or burn him out or something equally horrible. He'd had no chance to experiment with such forces, and now was definitely not the time. When he reached the airlock, Nate tried to open it. Whoever had built Adamant had apparently thought entering the airlock while under Retin Drive was a bad idea. All told, he had to override 4 different warnings, but within a minute it was open and he stepped inside. Then he pushed the call button on the intercom set inside the lock and said, "Andrew, I'm ready. Go ahead and shut off the drive."
"Roger,"
Andrew said a moment later. Weightlessness wasn't quite instant, but it came quickly enough. Clutching the globe in one arm, Nate grasped Energemetra 6 and drew a bubble of air around himself, then cycled the airlock. It took some time, holding the air bubble and concentrating on the globe, to find and fumble open the channels he'd seen closed, hopefully increasing the size of the veil when it activated. It took far too long for him to figure out how to nudge the first one just right to change its state. Once he'd figured it out, though, the rest came much more quickly. With every channel open, Nate held the globe out in front of him and tried to activate it. There was a momentary flicker inside, then nothing. Nate got the distinct impression of floating free, unsecured. It was enough to give him vertigo. Strange. Being in microgravity had never done that to him before. He shook his head, which actually did start him floating slightly, so he had to grab the globe to his chest and reach out to steady himself with a handhold. When he was sure his spin was under control, he reached out again with Energemetra 6 and tried again to turn the globe on. This time, the impression of floating free was so strong the vertigo made him retch. That answered that question. His subconscious had been telling him the globe needed an anchor. That had been the itch at the back of his mind. But hindsight wasn't going to help him with the enemy less than an hour behind. If he'd known sooner, he might have done something different. But wishing wasn't going to help him either. The question was, now what? The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like Crisis Pregnancy Centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.
All right, y'all. Thank you. I appreciate all of you being here. Listeners, thank you, Luke. Thank you, Mel. Thank you, oldest and second and third. Appreciate it. I'm looking forward to next week where we get to read the final chapter. Until then, hope everybody has a great week, and we will see you next time.